Welcome to the Startup Addict Podcast. I'm Nick Swinburne. I've been starting companies for over 20 years now. I've had some big successes, like Zappos.com, and lots of failures. Regardless of the outcome, I'm still convinced there's nothing more addicting than trying to turn ideas into reality.
Well, I guess let's get started. So how did the idea of Zappos come about?
Yeah. So Zappos, the idea came about back in 1998. So I was a couple of years out of college, went to school in Santa Barbara.
What do you end up studying?
Studied film studies. When I went through the applications, it was just, I have no idea what I want to do, which is a common theme throughout life. So it was, journalism, film studies. Ended up in Santa Barbara, studied film studies. A couple of years into college, I started messing around with the idea of having starting companies, right? So I had a friend that was an artist, and I had been selling some baseball card shows. I'd been selling some baseball cards at local shows. I had a collection at home. I needed some money to, pay to have fun in college. And so I brought some baseball cards down and started selling them, and I realized a lot of people had baseball cards. And was there something unique I could have? So I asked my friend Colin to paint some pictures. He painted a picture of Jason Kidd, who went to Cal, just got drafted by the Mavericks. I went to a local printer, made like 100 copies. And then I saw that he was doing an autograph signing at a show. So I went to the show, arranged to have him sign all the, I think he signed like 25 of them. Yeah. And then I sold them. And I thought, wow, that was fun. I wasn't really focused on making money or profits. I wasn't thinking about any of that shit. I was just thinking, I made something and I sold it. The fact that I sold it probably for less than it cost me to make it, to me was irrelevant. It was just a rush making something, having something that no one else had, and then selling it. So from there, I was always obsessed with thinking of ideas. A couple years after college, was working at a company called AutoWeb.com. This is back in 1998, so I didn't have email until I was out of college. So I answered an ad in the Mercury News for a customer service department at AutoWeb. And prior to that, I'd worked in a couple of sports teams. I'd worked for the San Bernardino Stampede, single-A baseball team, and I'd worked for the San Diego Padres. And that was fun, but sports was the selling point, right? You get free tickets. You get to be around a sports team the whole time. But as far as a career path and a dynamic organization, I mean, these things have been around for a long time. They knew what they needed. They knew what they wanted. People tended to stay in the jobs for a long time. So even though I only worked for the Padres for a year, I kind of realized it doesn't feel like there's a whole bunch of opportunity for me. People are probably going to stay here until they die. I had one chance, actually, to get in a position which I thought maybe I would stay in for a long time. It was in the PR department, and I'd been highly recommended by my boss. I was doing customer service and group sales at the time. So I went to the interview, and they told me, you've been highly recommended. We prefer to hire from within. Just go ahead and write up a press release. I'm sure you're familiar with how we do our press releases, and that's about it. Unfortunately for me, I wasn't familiar with the press releases. I hadn't thought of reading any press releases before I interviewed with the PR department. So I just sat there and said, I'm not familiar with your press releases. So I didn't get that job.
Is it like you to just take a job or look for a job, whether you know it or not, just to try it?
Yeah, I mean, at that time, I was just kind of like, I got to college. I don't know what I want to do. Sports sounds fun. Went to a job expo, got a job in San Bernardino. And then I thought, I was given the pitch on, if you work your way up, you start in the minors, one day you can be in the majors, kid. Yeah. And then this other guy I was working with, I think his name was Luke, he quit after about a month. Where are you going? I got hired by the Dodgers. We're like, wait a minute, we're the Dodgers single A team. How the hell did you get hired by the Dodgers? I applied. And what position? Same position I got here. Yeah. Doing what? Doing the same thing. So I was like, oh, man. So I immediately applied for the Padres. Got that job. But when I realized that I'd kind of blown my opportunity, I decided to move back home to the Bay Area. And it led me to this position at AutoWeb. So I was not really a car guy, but I thought, let me check it out. And it was just totally different. I went in there on the first day, interviewed with the founder, and I think he was the CEO at the time, Payam. He was either, I think, a year older than me. The company, there was only about a dozen people at the time, but they were all, I just remember thinking, they were all so young, so excited. They believed like anything was possible. And it was like captivating. Like, I'm like, I want to be here. This is really exciting. So I got that job, and then, you know, within, I stayed there for about 11 months. But during that time, I started to think, well, if they can do it, and if the internet's taking everything over, like, what could I do? So I had a whole bunch of ideas, you know, and I met someone in the design department, Ken, and we'd sit there and just brainstorm ideas all day. I'd have an idea. He'd mock up like a JPEG that we would basically have as like, this is our website, you know? And so at the time, Yahoo was the big search engine. We mocked up something called forstudents.com. And I was like, this is it. This is the big idea. We're going to start a portal, like the Yahoo basically for students, where only students can use it, and you need a student email address to get in, and we'll have for all these kind of discounts and services to students, and it'll be great. So I got really excited. And I told Payam, and I told my boss, Michelle, I said, hey, I'm leaving. Go leave to start this company called forstudents.com. And I still remember they grabbed everyone. We sat in the conference room and they pulled everyone together and they said, hey, Nick's leaving. You know, everyone's like, either who the fuck is Nick, or
how long were you working there?
I was there 11 months.
Oh, 11 months.
Because I remember I was in such a rush to leave, which is another common theme. Like, I'm like, always, I can't wait once I think of something, that I had one more month until I vested my stocks. But I was like, fuck it, I'm out of here. I have to do this. And so I remember him saying, you know, Nick's got a $1 million idea. He's going to leave and do this. And I was like, yeah, fucking $1 million idea. I'm out. And then I put up this website. I started poking around, reaching out to companies. I found this company, Student Advantage, out of Boston, that had discount cards. You know, like you'd show it at, you know, hey, it's your student card, and you get, you know, a discount at Subway or wherever.
What was the problem? How did you find all the companies?
I just went online, and I think I searched for like student discounts or student loyalty cards.
You just kind of looked in the Bay Area?
Was it? No, I was looking online. These guys were out of Boston.
Out of Boston.
Yeah. Okay. So I reached out to them, and somehow it turned out that a guy in charge of something, he was business development or something, he went to high school out here. And so I don't remember how exactly, but we got put in touch. He said, hey, we've been thinking of building a web portal for students ourselves. Why don't you fly out here and maybe we can work together? I said, okay. So I flew out there. You know, mind you, at this point, I'm a couple of years out of Santa Barbara. It was in a rush. I was in a rush to get out of college. And then when I got out of college, I was like, why the hell was I in a rush to get out of college? So I had a couple of my old roommates, Dave and Tom Anderson, had moved to Boston. So I was like, wait, I can go. So I went and stayed with them, and we went out and partied. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. I go to the interview. I'm like, this will be like being in college again. I'll live with Tom and Dave. You know, Boston's got a ton of colleges around there. They interviewed me, and they said, okay, here's the job. Here's an office. It was on the BU campus. And you're going to basically head up this project, and you can hire students to come and work for you. And I was thinking, dude, what could be better than that? Yeah, sign me up. And then I flew home, and I told my parents. I said, hey, I'm leaving. I'm going to move to Boston. I'm going to go work for Student Advantage. And they were like, okay. You quit your job like a month ago, a couple weeks ago, because you said you had to start your own company. Now the first person you meet says, that's a good idea. Can you do it for us? And they're going to pay you basically the same amount you were getting paid at your last job. And you're going to do that? I was like, ugh.
The logic.
You're right.
The logic hits all right, and kicks
yeah.
it.
So I'm like, all right, well, I can't take the job. But now that I've been out there and I've seen all the resources they have at their disposal, I don't feel as excited about trying to do this on my own. So my dad was like, oh, you got lots of good ideas. I thought that shoe idea was pretty good. So the shoe idea was, I had worn Vans my whole life, and maybe it sounds crazy now, but you know, in 1998, when I was 25, I was convinced that whatever the local shoe store had was what Vans had. So if I bought a blue shoe, and then when I went back, you know, a few months later to get another pair, they only had black and red. I figured they don't make the blue anymore. I never really spent much time thinking about it, and thought, oh, maybe this shoe store only has part of what Vans makes. I figured, this is where you buy Vans. This is what they have, so they don't have them. But I was looking at this point. I was looking for a pair of Airwalk Desert boots. I don't remember why. They were basically like these suede boots that had like this jagged bottom. Apparently, you'd float in the sand or something if you wore them. And I was determined to get them. So I was walking around the mall, Stonestown Mall in South San Francisco. I was at a store called Track and Trail, and I asked if they had them, and they didn't. They didn't have my size. So I was like, ah, all right. So I walked around the rest of the mall, and I couldn't find that same pair of shoes anywhere. So then I was thinking, well, wait a minute. If AutoWeb is basically, AutoWeb's business model was, you want to buy a Toyota Land Cruiser. Here, fill out this form. We'll take your information. We'll send it to three Toyota dealerships, and one of them will contact you, or they'll all contact you. You buy a car. And basically, the dealerships would pay them for the leads. So I thought, well, shit. Maybe there's more people looking for shoes. I'm going to start the AutoWeb of shoes. I'm going to have a site where you can tell us what kind of shoes you're looking for, and then I'm going to connect you with local shoe stores that might have them. So that was the original concept. There was a site at the time called SportSite, which was a sporting goods site. So I thought, well, all right, that sounds like a good name, so I'm going to call mine ShoeSite. So I got I got ShoeSite.com, and I printed up a piece of paper, ShoeSite.com, and I did kind of what me and Ken had always done, have an idea. Now let's create one image, which would represent a web page, and then let's see what happens. So that was where the idea came from. But because I've always kind of been a little scatterbrained and always had a lot of ideas, my process at the time was just have ideas. And then I'd have an idea and I'd say, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. You know, I still do the same thing. I got domain names last night for random ideas, but it's just think of an idea, get a domain name, and then say I'm going to focus on it, then usually get distracted by another idea. So that's kind of what had happened. And I had, I thought of forstudents.com around the same time, and I'd gotten enamored with that, and so I was focused on that.
So for ShoeSite, once you thought of the idea, what was the process to, like, how do you start to?
Well, first I didn't do anything. First I just banked it as, like, one of these ideas. Yeah. And then when I decided not to do Student Advantage, and my dad reminded me, like, dude, I thought the shoe thing was a pretty good idea. I was like, okay. So the next day, I printed the file on a piece of paper, and I went down to a shoe store in town called Footwear, etc., with a camera. And I said, hey, because I figured, all right, I need a website. I need to see if anyone will buy shoes. Because I've decided that cars was a high dollar product. You know, dealerships could afford to pay whatever they were paying, $20, $100 per lead.
Yeah.
But for a $40 pair of Vans, no one's going to give us, like, how much of a lead am I going to get?
Yeah.
So I figured, okay, maybe we can just sell shoes. You know, and SportSite was just selling sporting goods. So I figured, okay, that's how it morphed kind of from the AutoWeb idea to that. So I went to Footwear, et cetera, and I said, can I take some pictures of some shoes? And then he was like, what? I was like, can I take some pictures of your shoes? Why? Well, I want to start this shoe website, and I wanted to see if I could take some pictures of your shoes, put them on my website, and if anyone orders one, I'll come in and buy it. And he was like, well, I can't give you a discount. I'm not a wholesaler. I don't need a discount. I'll pay full price. That's fine.
So he thought of, like, free advertising.
Just kind of chuckled and probably figured, like, you know.
He's wasting his time.
Thank God for him, right? Like, he was a nice guy that was like, you know what? I'm not going to kill this kid's dream. Yeah, knock yourself out. Take a picture of as many shoes as you want. He probably figured, yeah, worst case, he sells some shoes. Or best case, he sells some shoes. Worst case, he never sees me again. And so I said, okay. So I took some pictures of the shoes, and I made a little website. And
How did you promote the website? Back then, it was very, very limited.
I don't really remember how I promoted it. I think I put the website up, and I don't remember, to be honest, if it was a proof of concept at the time where I just said, look, there's a website with shoes on it, and I just went through the process. Because, you know, in 1998, things were very new. Like, e-commerce and everything it was starting and everything was possible, but it wasn't like now where it was, like, so commonplace. So I don't really remember what I did with that website. I know that I went to more shoe stores. And I think what happened was I put the website up, and whether I sold one or not, I think I just decided, yes, this is an idea worth pursuing. But there's a problem here. I can't. This isn't a business. Like, what am I going to do with his shoes? So I ended up in Atlanta somehow. I went online, and I said, let me see who's already selling shoes online. So I looked up, and there was a company called Friedman Shoes. And they're famous for, like, athletes. Athletes would go in there and buy, like, oversized shoes. You know, they figured, okay, there's a bunch of athletes that have a hard time. The most popular styles from those popular brands, whether it's athletic shoes or dress shoes, they don't usually make them in, like, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. So they found that niche, and they had a shoe store in Atlanta. Basically, all professional sports teams, especially basketball teams, when they went through town, they would all get on the team bus, and they'd go to Friedman Shoes and load up. So I flew out there. I called the guy up and I said, hey, your website looks cool. They were selling a bunch of like exotic alligator skin green shoes and that. And I said, I'm working on this shoe site and I wanted to know if I could come out there and talk to you and take some pictures and see if we could partner. So we said, okay. So we got out there. His name was Brett Friedman. Super nice guy. He was the son of the owner. So he was kind of gung-ho. The same thing. He figured, okay, we got this family business, but the internet's the next thing. And he obviously had a website, so he believed in it. And I said, okay, well, let me, how do we do this? And so we went back and forth. And I, at the time, remember offering them, like, I'll do whatever. You guys just be the fulfillment shoe partner. I'll run the website. And they were kind of more like, no, it's going to be under our brand, and we'll pay you a commission or, you know, whatever it was. But I took a bunch of pictures, and I added those to the site. So now I got this weird collection of, like, you know, comfort casual shoes, and then I've got like size 15 and above, you know, green gaiters and stuff like that. But it was enough where I don't remember the details exactly, but I know I sold a couple pairs of shoes somehow.
How long did it take?
I don't really remember. I don't remember how. I mean, the first, like when I first reserved the domain name until the time that I formed LLC was 4 months. So, or the company.
So when you sold the shoe, what was the whole process to get that shoe out? You would just run to the store and...
Go to the store and buy it, right? And I think it wasn't even that smooth. I think it was more like someone ordered something and they didn't even have that size. And so I'm just canceling orders, right? And even when we actually started, a lot of it was, we had no inventory system. We're just off an Excel sheet. Their brands are sending us an Excel sheet of what they have in stock, which is not even accurate. So even when we were, you know, up and running fully, our return percentage were insane. And we didn't even know. Like, we just assumed no news is good news. We'd get an order, we'd send it off to a store or a brand at the time, and then, well, they didn't say anything. So I guess this order went out, and then the customer would call us like a month later and be like, where the hell are my shoes? Oh, hold on, let me check.
And so then you, in that process, how long did you keep doing that? Like, till you felt like that you were comfortable with like the proof of concept?
I don't remember. I just remember I was convinced that there was an opportunity. I don't think I thought it was going to be fast. So I went to Silicon Graphics and I applied for a job because I wasn't all in. Like, I knew I wanted to do something, but it wasn't like this immediate light bulb went off of like, oh shit, this is a no brainer. You got to get on this as fast as possible. There was something saying, hey, keep working on it. But it was never clear. Like, I always think this, I read about these entrepreneurs that had this clear vision and followed it to a T, and I'm like, I don't know. Either you're remembering it wrong or you were a lot luckier than I was. Because for me, it was always just like, is this worth it? Is it going to work? Should I do it? You know, blah, 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 blah. But eventually, I was confident enough that just in general, people would buy shoes. So my proof of concept, I don't remember. It could have been as little as I sold a pair of shoes, right?
Yeah.
But I found this report that said that in 1998, 5% of shoes sold in the United States had been sold through mail order catalogs. So the way I found the report was I was just searching for things online. It was this company called Footwear. I think it was called Footwear Market Insights. They had this annual report. I think it was like $99 or something. So I bought it. And I was just reading it and I got in the catalog section. I'm like, wait, what the 5% of shoes sold were sold through mail order catalogs? I've never ordered a pair of shoes in a catalog. And then it had the total footwear statistics, right? So it said $40 billion worth of shoes were sold in the U.S. I'm like, wait, 5% of $40 billion is $2 billion. That means $2 billion worth of shoes were sold through mail order catalogs. Well, hold on a second. It doesn't matter how many shoes I've sold now. It just means if anyone will believe this logical step from mail order catalogs, it's already happened. It's not hypothetical. I didn't really believe it. It seemed unbelievable to me. Yeah. Like, one of every 20 pairs of shoes sold is sold through a catalog. And I guess it was a lot of work boots and different things. And who knows if that statistic was accurate, but thank God the statistic was there and in a report because I just latched onto that. And so
kind of through a fire.
Yeah. It gave me confidence of like, whoa, this isn't such a reach. This isn't crazy. So the next thing I did was February of 99, I looked up and I found that there was a shoe show. So there was a shoe show in Las Vegas called the WSA show. It's every February and August, the biggest shoe show in the country, Western Shoe Association. So I looked that up and I said, all right, I'm going. And I flew out there, asked my buddy Jeremy to come out, and we just, you know, partied and I went to the thing. But I walked around the show with a piece of paper. I remember I made green photocopies and it said shoesite.com. And I walked around and I was like, all right, just go up to booths. And I had I'd never been to a trade show, so I didn't know what to expect. I didn't realize these booths were going to be like houses and there was going to be gatekeepers, like, you know, hostesses basically at the front. You'd say, yeah, I'd like to talk to someone about selling your shoes. And they'd say, do you have an appointment? No. Well, sorry, we're appointment only. I was like, all right. So I had to walk around. I'd go to the smaller brands and I'd talk to smaller brands. And, you know, now having been on the other side of things at trade shows, a lot of times you're bored to death. Like there's no traffic and there's nothing to do. So I would, you know, I would walk around. I'd say, hey, I got this shoe concept. What do you think? And the feedback I got from people was basically, we're not going to do anything with you now. You have no idea what you're doing. But eventually someone's going to probably do that. Yeah, it's a good idea. Keep working on it. So I was like, all right. And then I turned the corner and I saw this booth and it said shoe.net. And I was like crushed. Like my heart sank. And I'm like, no, someone already fucking did this. They're already here. They're already at the booth. And there was no one at the booth. So I walked up and it was this website. It was password protected. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Or they just put a kiosk and then...
No, they were there. They just were so slow. I guess they'd wandered off to go to the bathroom or something. Right. So the guy came back. I was like, what is this? And he's like, oh, it's a B2B marketplace. Like, what's B2B? It's like business to business. We do, it's like for wholesale. Instead of for people placing their wholesale orders, retailers placing their wholesale orders from brands could use us instead. And in one place, I'm like, oh, thank God. It's not a
direct to consumer.
Yeah, it's not a site. So, all right, cool. So I left and I felt, okay, well, I clearly didn't get anyone that said they would, yeah, let's do this. Or, oh yeah, unbelievable. How do we get involved? But I had enough people that said it's going to happen eventually that it encouraged me to kind of stick with it. So I came back, I got a job at Silicon Graphics because I figured, you know, I think an important lesson always is like, I didn't know I was doing it at the time, but you got to take the pressure off a little bit. Like if people say now like, oh, well, it's easy now, you have money, so there's no pressure. It's like, well, in a way that's true. There's, you know, there's different pressures, but it's true that you don't have like you're able to do certain things. But when you're just starting out, you can eliminate that by having a job or keep your job until your idea basically says you don't need your job anymore. Because at least then you don't have to worry about like, how am I going to pay rent? How am I going to do this, that, or the other, right? Like it's hard enough when you're thinking of an idea to stay focused and the distractions are hard. So if you have a bunch of stresses that are financial, it's going to be harder to kind of focus. And people will say, oh no, it'll make you hungry or it'll make you, but I think to a certain extent, you know, but if you don't know like how you're going to eat, then very rare is the person that's going to be so focused on their idea that they're going to be like, well, I don't fucking care about eating. I'm just going to focus on this idea. So anyways, I got a job. And what the job allowed was I would sit there and I was doing a web design for one of the intranets when I met a guy across the hall, Jared. And I started talking to him, kind of being friends with him or went to lunch, whatever. He was higher up than me. So I think I had a couple of assignments for him. We'd start talking and I'd tell him, yeah, I got this idea. And you got to remember at the time, it was kind of like the Wild West and everyone was interested in everything and everyone, you know, any idea was possible, everyone wanted us. So he's like, oh, tell me more about it. And so he took the time and he helped me, you know, kind of solidify a business plan and think about all these things that I wasn't thinking of. Well, how are you going to do this? And how are you going to do that? And how are you going to do this? And he helped me actually go over to his house and he'd actually help me type it out, which is crazy. Like, you know, you look back at everything and there's always people that help that it wouldn't have happened without that. And so basically what happened there was I said, okay. And he said, now you're ready to talk to people. So we met another guy across the hall, Alex Lloyd. And they would like, oh, let me introduce you to someone. And so they'd introduce me to someone and I'd kind of talk to them about it. And then I figured, I think I'm onto something. Now I got a business plan. I got a couple guys here that are interested. I think they said, hey, you know what? Are you going to raise money? I don't know. I think I probably should. I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. And so they're like, we'll pitch some money in. So I decided, all right, I'm gonna take this seriously. And I'm going to try to raise $150,000. And I'm going to try to raise it for people I know. I didn't really know anyone with a bunch of money. So I ended up raising it anywhere from $2,500 to $10,000 a person. Those guys each put in $10,000. You know, I had like friends that put in a couple $1,000, a few $1,000, friends from college. And it was a big deal at the time. A friend from college gave me $5,000. It was probably the only $5,000 they had, you know. But I pieced together $150,000. My brother's father-in-law was a lawyer. So another thing I got lucky was a lawyer at Wilson Sonsini. So he agreed to do the documents.
How did you break up with all the people that invested? Like in terms of...
I didn't know how to do that. So I'd ask people, how the fuck, what do I do? Like, what do I give them for it? And they said, I don't know, just make something up. It's all hypothetical.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck, well, $1 million sounds like a good idea. All right. Things worth $1 million. So for $150,000, you get 15%. Yeah. Which is funny, right? I wasn't even thinking, is it worth $1 million before they put the money in or after? I was just thinking, hey, look, let's keep this fucking simple. $1 million? This is a million. I was told I had $1 million idea. It wasn't this one, but fuck it. Maybe this is $1 million idea. So, and I just picked $150,000 because I figured that sounds good. Pay some legal fees, get a little office, hire a couple people, see what happens. So I was able to piece that together. They put $150,000 together, got an office, hired a friend from college, hired a friend from high school's younger brother, and just kind of got started. And now we had a company, you know, ShoeSite.com.
So now you have this idea. So how did you go about like trying to like get this thing executed?
You mean killed?
Yeah, just fucking on his knees, cut the goddamn head off.
Let me say how did you get this thing going?
Yeah, execute it a little bit. Okay. How did you fucking murder this thing? All right. So you have ShoeSite.com. You got a bunch of people in your office. So what was the day-to-day? Like, what'd you end up doing? Like, how'd you get this thing started?
Well, I mean, we just kind of started doing stuff, right? So I hired these guys, Matt and John, and just said, what are you good at? It's like, oh, I've been working at a temp agency doing accounting. All right, well, then you're the accountant. What are you good at? I like basketball. All right, well, then you're doing customer service and whatever else there is to do, you know? I actually had a friend, Billy, who had invested. And he was helping us. I don't remember exactly what he was doing. And he quit. He left after like a month and was like, I'm going to go drive around the country in a van with our other buddy, Cliff. And I'm like, you're going to do what? Drive around the van. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do marketing. So we made him like these Zappos magnets to stick on the side of his van. And we gave him a bunch of stickers.
Well, it was ShoeSite, wasn't it?
ShoeSite. Oh, yeah, ShoeSite. Yeah. Sorry. So he would drive around and he would just like, actually, no, it wasn't. Yeah, ShoeSite. Yeah. So the way it went from ShoeSite to Zappos was, and it's, you know, this is 19 years ago. So chronologically, sometimes, you know, you remember things like a little like, oh, I remember this before this, but really it was, you know, a month after that, whatever. But basically we had this office, we got started. At the time, there was no Google. You know, things weren't really search-based. Yahoo was everything. Everyone went to Yahoo and you basically clicked on shopping and you clicked on clothing and you clicked on footwear and you clicked on men's or whatever it was, right? So I don't even remember exactly how it worked, but I think you could pay to basically be featured listing in a different category. So we had a website up. At this point, I believe we'd negotiated like a little commission. So maybe we're getting like 10% if we sell something from a few shoe stores. And we were getting orders. And we were like pretty excited about this. Like, we get a couple orders. But we still were like, what are we doing? We haven't made any inroads in the footwear industry. None of us are familiar with footwear. None of us are familiar with anything. Like, right? Basically, this is our first job for all of us.
And you're still having to go to the store to buy the shoes and taking pictures at shoe stores.
And because anything was possible and because of these guys at Silicon Graphics, I was getting meetings with VCs. So I'm going to different venture capital firms and I'm sitting there and I'm putting on a fucking suit and I've got my presentation. I'm showing them the market size and I'm saying, you know, 5% of shoes sold were sold through mail order catalogs. And they're saying, no one's going to buy shoes without trying them on. I'm saying, no, it already happened. Like, I have the statistic. Yeah, but I don't see it. All right, I'd either get that or I'd get some guy that would put his foot up on the table and be like, do you have this brand? What the fuck? Not what? You gotta have this brand. You know, more enamored with like his own shoes and trying to show me what a big shot he was with his shoes. But they were all, you know, it was a great time because they were aware of the fact that I had no business experience, no footwear experience, but anything was possible. So it was awesome, right? So I went to company Sequoia, one of the biggest VC firms. And I got introduced to a guy there and he was like, you know, there's been a watch company lately that's done pretty well with this. So I think maybe there's an opportunity here. So even at that stage, I was able to get, you know, another meeting and another meeting and another meeting. But one thing that kept coming up was, you need a shoe guy. Like, how are you going to be the biggest shoe company online if you don't know anything about shoes? It's about relationships. And I knew that from going to the show, right? I couldn't even get into the booths. So I had to have a shoe guy. So around the same time, I said, okay, fine. I need to find a shoe guy. Nordstrom was, I thought, you know, like the most famous shoe store. So I called up Nordstrom and I said, yeah, I'd like to speak to the shoe buyer. She said, well, you know, what's this about? Well, I'm a men's footwear brand and I'm interested in being sold in your store. All right, fine, hold on. Put me through to a guy, and I got, you know, got the guy's voicemail. His name was Fred. So I left him a message. I said, hey, Fred, I'm actually a recruiter and I've got a e-commerce possibility for you in the footwear space. If you give me a call back, I'd appreciate it. You know, it could be an exciting opportunity. So he called me back. And then I said, okay. So we agreed to meet at a 4th Street Bar and Grill in the city. And we go down there, and he's a couple years older than me. He's wearing a suit. He looks like he works at Nordstrom. You know, he's got his brown leather shoes on, all shiny shoes. He's got a suit. And I walked in and just kind of shorts and a t-shirt, whatever the hell I was wearing at the time. And he looked a little disappointed. And I said, hey, Fred, it's me, you know. And I'm not a recruiter. I'm working on the startup. So he was like, huh, okay. And he's like, well, look, I'm in the footwear space, and obviously I see what's going on in Silicon Valley, and I'm interested in, you know, interested in that space, and I believe footwear could work online. So we started talking, and, you know, he said, how much funding have you raised? $150,000. Like, what? Like, well, that's not going to be enough. I know, but, you know, is there any plans for, well, yeah, I mean, we're going to, you know, we're working on it. I'm just kind of doing what we're doing. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just, you know, I don't remember what I was saying. I mean, I had a pitch. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I'm sure I believed it, whatever it was. So he said, okay, well, I'd be interested, but you need to, you know, I can't really make the jump. I believe he just had a son, and he's like, I can't make the jump. I got my family to take into account. I was like, all right, fine. And he calls me a few days later. He's like, hey, you know, if you're going to do this, I know you don't have a whole bunch of money, but you really need to hire my boss as well. I'm like, what the fuck, your boss? Well, I don't actually, you know, I know a lot of the brands, but I don't have any sway with them, right? Like, really, it's my boss that's the one that writes the orders and that they trust. I'm just kind of I'm a little more junior at the moment. Like, I'm the buyer, but I'm not, he's the merchandising manager or whatever. So I'm like, all right, fine. Well, I can't afford to hire either of you, so, you know, whatever. But when I met his boss, and he was a nice guy as well. You know, Fred's pretty mellow, so I think personally there's a little more of a, it was easier for us to get along, and John was pretty more intense. Yeah. But they both agreed that it was an interesting opportunity. They were both interested. It looked like, I think there was some restructuring going on at Nordstrom at the time, so there was added that in my favor, that there was some uncertainty as far as, you know, who was going to have a job or not have a job. So everyone there was kind of looking out for what was next, just in case it was them that got the axe. But I kept doing meetings, right? And so I kept going to meetings, and I kept getting rejected. Sequoia was the only one that I got through multiple meetings, and they remained interested. But it was always, let's touch base in the future. Maybe we can get you in here to meet a few more of the partners. You know, and you go in a meeting, you're putting all your hopes in it. You have no idea. I'm going in. I've never been to a fucking, you know, VC firm, let alone like a third meeting. And I'm meeting these guys, and they seem to be like perplexed but intrigued at the same time. So I'm like, okay. But eventually we start getting all the rejections, right? So I start getting all the rejections. Sequoia hasn't officially rejected me, but everyone else has. And so I talked to, his name was Art Schneiderman. My brother's, his name still is Art Schneiderman. My brother's father-in-law. And he said, listen, I don't know. And he was great. He was really helpful in kind of guiding me through the process. And he said, I don't know that this is necessarily your big idea, but I think you're going to learn something from this idea. And I don't really have anyone else to introduce you to. And neither did Jared and Alex, were kind of tapped out too. They're like, we don't really have anyone else to introduce you to. We had the $150,000, but, you know, we were spending it. I mean, it was a few months, and you know, it's one of those weird things where it's like, it sounds like a lot of money, and it could last us if we just tried to make $150,000 last, but that's not the goal, and that's not why anyone gave us the money. They gave us the money to get to the next stage where we could raise more money so we could grow into a big company, right? No one's going to say, here's $150,000, stretch this out for a couple of years and hang out with three of your friends working, you know? So I was like, all right.
What were the VCs looking for, like in terms of?
At that point, they were just looking for opportunity. So they were most interested in, like, so the things I had in my favor were market size, $40 billion. The fact that, I mean, my my uh, my presentation, which right now they've got it in a glass case at the Zappos headquarters, is like, my assumption was that people will continue to wear footwear for the foreseeable future. You know, which sounded funny, but I was like, listen, dude, people are always going to have to wear shoes. They're always going to buy shoes. They have more than one pair of shoes. Their shoes are always going to wear out. They're always going to need another pair. You know, at the time I was a little more focused on, you know, hey, it's hard for people with odd-sized feet or extra-wide feet or these different scenarios. Because I figured at the time, okay, you can always go to the shoe store and buy shoes. I wasn't aware. Well, when I went to that first shoe show, the other thing that kind of went, the light bulb that went off for me was like how many shoes there were. Because I didn't get into the Vans booth, but I looked into the Vans booth and I was like, you got to be fucking kidding
me. It's more than just blue.
All these shoes I've worn my whole life, every color combination, right? They're still available. It's just this guy at the local store is not buying them all. So I was like, if I could put that online, right? So the pitch kind of became, A, sell shoes online for convenience. B, for people that have hard to fit sizes and these logical extensions where people can't find it locally. And C, even people that can find shoes locally, we're going to put the biggest selection possible. I'm going to put the fucking shoe show online, which I thought would be incredible, right? And it was all going to be drop ship. We weren't going to take any inventory. But finally, you know, so at the, while we're doing this, right, we got a small team and we're sitting there and we've got a website. We're taking pictures of shoes. We're, you know, refining the website. We're doing some cheap kind of paid listings on Yahoo. And I don't even remember what we're doing. We're doing basically whatever we could do to try to get a sale or two, you know, two sales, three sales, four sales, just to keep proving it and keep getting some traction.
And are you getting percentages just, or are you just breaking even?
I don't know. I think we're getting like 10% maybe at some point was probably the best. And it's also a pain in the ass. Like there's a lot of customer service because the shoes are, you know, we're not like even all the things you take for granted now, like returns and easy tracking and all these things. It just wasn't the case. Like it was just complicated.
A lot of phone calls.
Yeah, a lot of work for like a very few sales. But eventually, Art sat me down. He said, "Listen, I don't have anyone else to introduce you to, but I did see some deals come across the desk lately. There's this fund called Venture Frogs. So by this point, it's August of 99. So I've been working on the idea for, I don't know, a little under a year. The first shoe show that I went to was 6 months ago. And I'd raised the friends and family money about 3 months ago, right? So he says, you know, you should talk to these guys because these guys just sold us a company, very successful, and they've started a fund. But the same way you're having trouble getting traction with the VC firms that you're going out to, they're having traction getting in the best deals because they don't have a track record. They're not the name that everyone wants in their deal. And he's like, to be honest, from what I've seen, they're willing to invest in anything. So I think you should meet with them. If you can't meet with them, if they don't give you money, then I think it's time to look to do something else.
Yeah.
All right, fuck. All right. So he gives me a number. He gives me a website. It's just vfrogs.com or venturefrogs.com. And I go to the website and all it has is a number to call. So I call and I leave a message and I said, hey, you know, it's my name's Nick. I'm working on this project, blah, blah, blah. It's $40 billion a year in sales. The footwear industry is $40 billion. Mail order sales are $2 billion. Think it could, obviously that makes it into a great online opportunity, blah, blah, blah. Call me back. So I get a call back and it's this guy, Tony, and he says, hey, you know, come talk. And at this point I'm like, you know what? Fuck this. I've worn a suit. I've got this presentation. You know, it's not like I think, oh, wearing a suit is good or bad. I just think you have to be yourself. So when I would put a suit on, and it's not like I've got a cool, well-fitted suit where I'm feeling good. You know, I've got something where it's just too tight around my neck, probably
double breast,
longer than my hands. You know, I just look and feel like a mess. Yeah. And so you just don't have any confidence because you feel like an imposter because this isn't you. And so I think that comes across in these meetings. That you're just not comfortable and you're trying to play this role of how you are. So I'm like, you know what, screw it. This time I'm going dressed normally, shorts and t-shirt, whatever. And I get in there and it was just this empty apartment. I remember it was upstairs from the AMC 1000 in San Francisco on Van Ness. And this guy's just sitting there. This young guy and he's like, what's up? And we just start, I might have brought the presentation, but I didn't go through it. And I felt more comfortable, and I'm like, I could do this fucking pitch forwards and backwards now. I've done it so many times and, you know, so well that no one's invested. But we just started talking, and I remember it just, you know, he was very easy to talk to, and we relaxed, and just thought, all right, fuck it, just talked, and okay, we'll be in touch. So I left, and I thought, no, I have no idea what the fuck's going to happen. And then go back to the office, and I'm sitting there just thinking, okay, we're going to run out of money soon. We haven't really proven anything. I mean, we're making a little bit of progress. You know, it's like so hard to remember back then, but there's no cloud. There's no build your own website quickly and easily, right? Like you're hiring someone, you're doing this, and we just like all the tech stuff. We don't have any tech people. It's hard. You know, my buddy Kevin was making the first website for us, but it was like very basic. And it was temperamental, and it's like, we're, you know, we gotta rent server space somewhere, and it was just complicated. And so Alfred called back, and I don't remember, to be honest, if I had to go meet with Alfred. Alfred was Tony's partner. But he said, I remember getting the call. I remember sitting in this office. And the office we had was a converted apartment. It was an apartment at 9th and Judah in San Francisco above a donut shop. It was a shithole apartment at the time. And we just, what's funny is when we moved out, this guy moved in. And I remember him being like, hey, what's up? My name's Craig. Nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah. You're moving in here, blah, blah, blah. And I'd have to go there every once in a while to get the mail the first month. And they're still there. It's Craig from Craigslist.
Oh.
So when we moved out, Craig from Craigslist moved in. But he renovated the whole place and decked it out and everything eventually. But I thought that was kind of random. But anyways, Alfred called and goes, hey, we decided we're going to invest $500,000. I'm like, holy shit. Like, I thought.
Were you nervous?
I'm a billionaire, like, at this point. Like, we have $500,000.
We get
like,
that blue pair
holy
of shoes.
Shit, you know? I said, okay, fuck, okay. So we, you know, closed the deal and, you know, they sent the paperwork over or whatever and read it and whatever. Art's like, yeah, you know, whatever it is, we'll take it. And it was, I don't remember what the valuation was. It was probably, it was probably $3 million or something. I don't remember what it was exactly. But anyways, so now I said, okay. And but part of their thing was, but you need a shoe guy. And I, you know, in the course of talking, when I talked to Tony, I said, I've got these shoe guys. They're willing to come on board, but I need money. So I had to do a little scrambling and say, Fred, A, do I need to hire both of you? Yes. Okay, fine. Well, I can do it. We just raised $500,000. Here's what we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. So it all came together and they said, okay, well, if you got the money, we're in. And Tony and Alfred and Tony were saying, as long as you got the shoe guys, which you said you do, as long as you have money, then we're in. Yeah. So I got that. So those guys joined. It was, I think their start date was August 1st of 1999. And I think we went to the WSA show on August 2nd. So it actually was hilarious because I had to put a fucking suit back on. But they still had all their appointments from Nordstrom. So I walked in the shoe show where I'd been there 6 months before. I couldn't get any booths. And all of a sudden I'm walking around with them and we walk in a booth and they'd be like, oh, Nordstrom's here. You know, let's kiss some ass. And, oh, hey, how's it going, guys? Oh, da, da. And here's their, you know, probably thought I was their assistant or something. And he's like, oh, this is actually Nick. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, hey, so we actually are no longer with Nordstrom. And you'd see like, what the fuck? They would just, the room would deflate and they'd be like, well, where are you now? And so what had happened was when we had been sitting there, even just a little bit we were selling online, we were like, shoe site, it's kind of a description, you know, like what the fuck? Where'd you get those? I got them at shoe site. Like, and you know, competitors at the time were like, there was a place called My Favorite Shoe and I don't know what the other ones were, Shoes Online or something. But like, it was like, this isn't a brand. And Sports Site had gone ahead and changed it. I guess they had a similar thought. So they'd changed their brand to Fog Dog. Okay. So it was like, huh. Well, they changed their name to Fog Dog. I think we should change our name. Yeah, we can't be Shoe Site. We need a brand. So we're sitting there trying to think of names, and Zapatos was Spanish for shoes. So we're like, you know, eventually I was like, let's call it. We want two syllables because Fog Dog is two syllables. And we, you know, basically we copied them the whole way. Sports Site, Shoe Site, Fog Dog, Zappos. And so I'm like, okay, so I called to get everyone on board. I had to call Fred. I had to call, you know, Venture Frogs. And I said, hey, we're going to change the name. And I had Kevin came over and he stayed up all night. And he's like, what? They're like, oh. Fred's like, no. We're going to the shoe show tomorrow. Like, we're going to call it something. I'm like, no, we're going to call it Zappos. And he's like, ugh. So I tell Venture Frogs and they're like, yeah, you know, we agree. You need a new name. And Zappos is cool. But I think if you spell it like that, people will think it's Zappos. So why don't you throw an extra P in there? All right, fuck, done. So we called it Zappos, which, and you know, made a new site real quick, made a new flyer or presentation to take to the show. We went out there to Zappos. So they'd say, hey, I'm not with Nordstrom anymore. I'm with Zappos. I was like, what the fuck is Zappos? It's an online shoe store. And they'd be like, okay. So, you know, we went around and a lot of them would say, the majority of them said, oh, you know, good luck with that. But a couple, because of the relationships, because they were Nordstrom guys, and they thought, fuck, they're leaving to do it. We ended up coming out of that show with a few brands. So all of a sudden, we had a few brands. Now, it wasn't a shoe store where we were going to buy their shoes. Now we're working directly with a brand. And we were all, at this point, the goal was it was all going to be dropship. We weren't going to take any inventory. Dropship meant if we got an order, the brand would send it from their warehouse directly to the customer. Yeah. And then we'd pay the brand. And so we walked out of there with, I think, I don't know if it was like four, five, six brands, whatever. You know, they were basically all men's brown shoe kind of comfort shoes. You know, I mean, because that's the department that Fred and John worked in.
So were the context. No
athletic shoes, no women's shoes, no kind of like fashion-y shoes. It was just, you know, basics, but it was a start.
Yeah.
And so from there we started, and then from there it just became, you know, keep adding a brand, add a brand, add a brand. And in the beginning we didn't have anything that we would want to wear ourselves. And then eventually it was like something we'd want to wear. And then you'd get one brand and we realized, hey, if we get one brand, the brands that are their competitors are going to be like, wait, why are they selling to this company? We want to be on there too. So we just kind of slowly started building like that, and it became reality, you know. And but then again, we were still going to run out of money again. Well, part of the problem was because we had to figure out, like, we can't sell anything. We can't sell enough to customers if we don't have what they're looking for. And we can't get these brands to sell to us because our sales volume is so low and we're unproven. So what do we do? So we decided the plan we came up with was like, we got to do something which makes them think that we're spending a lot of money and have a lot of money. And there's no Google AdWords at the time still, right? That came along a little bit later in our process. But like, we decided, I was like, well, fuck, I always loved the Warriors. Let's sponsor the Warriors. So we bought like an ad on the scorer's table. So we could tell the brand, hey, look for us in the second quarter. You'll see our Zappos ad pop up. I think with Venture Frogs, we had a thing where if we spent anything more than $25,000, we had to run it by them first. So I always tease them because later on they'd be like, yeah, this company was like spending recklessly on crazy things like sporting event ads. And I'd be like, dude, we had to fucking run all that by you. You signed off on all that shit. You know, we went to the Giants. The Giants had just moved into AT&T Park. At the time it was called Pac Bell Park. And so we said, okay, we'll buy the, whatever it was, top of the third. So the top of the third inning, there was going to be a Zappos sign behind home plate. So we could tell brands wherever they were, hey, watch the Giants game. But top of the third, you'll see our ad on there. And so it was funny. It started to work. The reality was if we kept spending money like that, it was the fastest way for us to go out of business. But in some perverse logic to the brands, it was like, oh, shit, these guys are serious. They're spending money. They're in high profile locations. This thing might work.
So it wasn't about building that. It was just getting the attention.
It wasn't about selling anything to a customer. It was about convincing a brand to sell us some fucking shoes so then we could sell it to a customer. But that we went through a lot of money that way. So we found ourselves again. Okay, now we need more money. This was like by December of 99. We still have money. So it's like, it's not like we're out of money, but we know we can see the end of the money. And so we're like, okay, we need more money. And Venture Frog says, hey man, we already spent all our money. Now, Venture Frogs at the time, Tony they had rented like two floors at the AMC 1000 at the peak of like the first .com office pricing. And they'd signed a 10-year lease. They'd personally guaranteed it. They were going to build this huge incubator. And all these companies they started and people were going to move in. And so they told us, hey, finally, they said, no, we don't have any money. And then finally they called and they said, all right, we'll give you guys another $500,000. But you guys need to move over into our incubator. So we'd started in San Francisco in this apartment. Fred and John were coming from the East Bay. Fred was coming up from Fairfield by Sacramento. John was coming from somewhere out by Walnut Creek. They said, hey, you know, driving over the bridge in the morning is a pain in the ass. So we moved our office for them to Emeryville. So now we're in the towers on Emeryville, right? When you go over the Bay Bridge, yeah, on the left, you see these towers. We're over there. Now fucking Venture Frog is telling us, we'll give you more money, but you got to move back to San Francisco. So we're like, that's great for us. You know, and those guys were like, fine, if we got to do it, we got to do it. So the incubator wasn't ready. So Tony said, I've got 10 apartments in this building. You guys can, you know, I'm going to put a couple companies, you guys included, in the penthouse apartment right now. So we said, okay, fine. So we moved into the penthouse. And then the next thing that happened was there was the crash. And like, so there was no companies that were ever going to move into this huge incubator they built.
So you were the only company that went?
We were the company. And so we had a crazy shit over there. Like we had, we had this developer, I think his name was Charles, that just lost it. And at the time, right, so he's got this fucking CD-ROM in his hand, which is our whole website, and he's threatening to smash it to pieces, and he's the only one that knew how to build it, and he has to deliver the CD-ROM so we can put it on the server, and we're like, nah! So we didn't, you know, it was crazy times back then. There was no, you know, that was literally a developer could do that. It was a contractor. If you hired him and you didn't, you know, he didn't like something, he could be like, I'm just going to throw this away, and there goes your whole website. But we moved over there, and so there was one other company in there. It was called like My Trade-In or something. It was a car thing. But then no one else moved in. And then by the time it got to their two floors of space were ready, there was no one else. So we moved in. But they, in anticipation of their incubator, they had hired like an HR person, an accounting person, an operations person, a marketing person, a tech person. And so like there was no other companies. We were the only company. So all those people were like, well, guess we'll work on Zappos, right? And then...
So you kind of got lucky then.
Super lucky, yeah. We got lucky, and it's interesting all around, because like, what happens if we don't move in there? Like, does anyone move in there? Right? Like, and then we grew, and then so we knew. I remember as we added brands, like people say, when did you know it was working? Well, one, we never knew it was working all the way through to like Amazon buying the company in 2009. So 10 years later, most of us who were there early on were convinced the company could go out of business the next day if we fucked one thing up. That was always how it felt. Yeah. We were never the company that was like this runaway success, because even though our sales volume was increasing, A, we didn't have any perspective. So most of us didn't realize like how unusual the sales volume was. All we knew was we're losing money. And wait a minute, we're selling, you know, when I left, we were doing $370 million in sales and we're still losing a shitload of money, right? Even when they get to $1 billion in sales, they're making like $10 million profit. Like it's crazy. Right. And so we're always having to sell. We always need more money, more money, more money. Like Tony is, when we got there, Tony had 10 apartments. When we moved to Vegas, Tony had one apartment left because he just kept selling the apartments because we needed money.
Wow.
We raised $250,000 from a company, Draper Richards, on a convertible note. Convertible note means they give you the money. And at the end of the year, they have the option of saying, give me my money back or converting it into equity in the company. And really, no one ever calls back a convertible note. But times were rough and we were growing but not profitable or showing any signs of like being incredible. So they actually asked for the money back.
Oh, shit.
And it was like crazy, right? So Tony sold an apartment and fucking gave him the money back. And like they would later say in their book, like we were one of the early investors in Zappos. And we'd be like, no, you weren't. You fucking loaned us money for a year, then took it back. But anyways, but yeah, so the thing we kept clinging to was we're adding more brands. And as we added more brands, more people were able to find shoes they wanted and buy stuff. You know, eventually we got to the point where most brands were like, you have to have a store to sell something. Because brands at this point were worried, e-commerce wasn't for sure. They were worried that like, they were mostly worried about, they didn't want to fuck up their brick and mortar business. So they were, you know, hey, we don't want to take too many risks on this online stuff because we want to make sure our bread and potatoes are good, which is our brick and mortar business. And so we had to be like, so a lot of them would put rules in place. We're only going to sell to companies that have a store. Fine, we'll have a store. So we converted our lobby into a store in the AMC movie theater. And we had rows of shoes between our desks. And we're like, and then we had like, then we bought a shoe store up by Chico. And then we had like a warehouse. We took an abandoned Macy's or something in Willows, California. And we turned it into a warehouse and like all these crazy things that you had to do. All of this was basically to convince brands to sell to us. But we knew that was kind of when we knew we were onto something was when more and more brands, the brands that had said no a year before or 2 years before, would finally say, okay, we'll sell to you now. And then, oh, that brand's selling to you? Okay, we'll sell to you now. And then, you know, once you have more brands, you can get more customers. So that was when we first started to know that there was something here.
So you have money coming in a little bit and some money, and you got the brand's attention now. So yeah. What are you exactly doing at this point?
So at this point, I'm CEO, right? I'm a self-proclaimed CEO. So I just, you know, and it was a weird one because I just, you know, my only job had been as a customer service rep.
Yeah.
Right. And then as a contract graphic designer. And when we first hired the shoe guys, right? So John, who was Fred's boss that came in, his first day, he said, hey, I know you're the CEO, but I think I should be the CEO. I was like, what the hell? Like, no, I'm the CEO. Yeah, but I think we need someone who's got like more business experience and more footwear experience. But I'm like, no, like, it's my company. I have this vision for this thing. Like, I'm doing it. You know, right now I'm raising money. I'm recruiting. I'm fucking meeting with brands. I'm doing all these things. Like,
yeah.
You know, I thought like, I saw it as like, this is my company and I'm the CEO of this company. And that's what's going to happen. Right. And then as we're growing, so, you know, the first year we basically did nothing. And then the next year we went to like 1.6 million. Some of my figures will be slightly off. And then it's like the next year's 8 million. The next year's 32 million. The next year's 70. Then like 160 something. And then 370. And it was like along that way, you got more and more people. And you got more and more departments. And you got more and more things to keep an eye on. And so for me, you know, I was going along and we had two things. We had a Venture Frogs, right? So Venture Frogs now has, we've raised what? We've raised $1.15 million. We raised $150,000 from the Friends and Family Rounder raised. We've got the $500,000 raised from Venture Frogs in August. And we've got this other $500,000, which we raised in early 2000. And so we're doing okay, but it's expensive, right? Because we're buying shoes now. It wasn't all drop shipping. We started to buy these things, and we've got a store, and then we're hiring all these people, and we're ramping up, and so we always needed money, and that was kind of the one constant theme of the whole thing all the way through was we always needed money. Yeah. Like, it was never like, oh, good, now we've raised the money, we can fucking relax. It was like, well, we've raised this money, but shit, you can look on the spreadsheet, it's going to be gone in this amount of time, and like. This is also a company where the goal wasn't, let's just have a company forever. When you raise money from people, you're pitching them on the fact that I can make this big and fast. So like, you don't have the option of saying, well, let's just relax for a while. Let's just downsize. Let's just turn this into a lifestyle business. Because like, you've taken other people's money. Now you have this like obligation to go and grow. You know, I think since Zappos, I've only taken people's money once, you know, and that was the company right after Zappos, because I realized, man, I don't want the pressure of like having to think about like what's best for me, what's best for the business, what's best for the employees. I want to think about those things. I don't want to have this fourth variable of like what's best for the investors. But obviously, we don't have any money, and you're trying to do something big, you have to keep raising money. So what happened with us was, so we had that money. We moved into the incubator in order to get that second $500,000. Venture Frogs was planning on building out all these companies in there. That doesn't happen. So there's three partners of Venture Frogs, right? Well, there's two partners. There's Tony and Alfred, who were in charge of the fund. And then there was Millie, who was doing a lot of legal work and a lot of the other, you know, stuff around there. But she left, and she went off to become a lawyer because they said, hey, we've already spent our money in our fund, and there's no companies moving in this incubator. So she left to become a lawyer. Alfred said, okay, I'm out of here. I'm going to go work for Tell Me Networks as the VP of finance or whatever it was. And then Tony was like, well, fuck. I guess I'll help. I'll work on Zappos because, like, I'm here every day. You guys are basically in my apartment half the time anyway, and he enjoyed the, you know, what we were working on. He'd always wanted to do a consumer brand, so Tony became full time working on Zappos as the primary investor. And you know, we didn't need titles. Like, titles have never been something to me that's that big a deal or important. But as we went along, there came a point where, you know, so the way we kept raising money was Tony selling apartments, which I think I've touched on already. But yeah. we constantly needed money. And at one point he said, hey, you know, I need to be, for some of these financial things, whatever, I need to be a signer, or these people think, you know, this is important, whatever. So let's be co-CEOs. I'm like, all right, that's fine. I'm like, you know, yeah. Great. You know a lot more about these things than I do. And one thing which is strange looking back, I realized, is there was just this weird, not weird, like this like dynamic, which I thought was normal, but it probably isn't, right? Because he, even when the company's struggling and no one else will give us money and he needs to put more money in, and he probably doesn't really want to put more money in, he just made his money and now he's spending it all, right? Like, he basically made all his money, spent it on, not just on Zappos, but on a whole bunch of things, and basically spent all of it. And I remember talking to him one of the first times I met him in his apartment, and I was like, holy shit, man, the penthouse that we moved into. I was like, I can't imagine like ever, I never thought I'd be in an apartment like this fucking crazy. He's like, yeah, I figure like 10 years from now, I'll either be like, man, I wish I still had that apartment. I wish I could afford it. Or I'll be like, that little place. So he just had this weird approach to, right? Like he could always thought he could remake his money. But he, you know, whenever we needed money, there was never much of a negotiation. One of us was, oh, we need this money. And he, all right, well, how are we going to get it? And like eventually, no one else is going to give it to us. Fuck Draper Richards. They're taking their money out. We got all the way through. Before Venture Frogs put the second round in, we got all the way through to the final partner meeting at Sequoia. So it was me, Fred, and John that went to that meeting. Tony wasn't working on the company yet. And we got all the way through the final meeting and they passed. And one of the lessons I learned in that meeting, which I think was important, was like, when, and it's the same with titles, is just being comfortable with what's reality, right? Like, yeah. If you don't know something, say, I don't know. If you aren't qualified or doing something, say, I'm not familiar with that. I'll figure it out. But we're in that meeting, and they were asking us a bunch of questions, and they looked at John, and they were like, hey, what was your role at Nordstrom? Right. And he should say, I was the merchandising manager in San Francisco and I was responsible for XYZ. But he's like, oh, you know, kind of upplated a little bit.
Yeah.
Different people feel, you know, he's nervous and he wants to, all he's trying to do is he's just trying to get this deal done and he's doing whatever he thinks is the best thing to do.
Yeah.
And I remember them saying, okay. And so one of the things that happened in October of 99 was Nordstrom announced that they're launching NordstromShoes.com. They're going to have this, whatever it was, $20, $30 million TV campaign and they're going to crush it. I remember getting all these phone calls like, well, that was fucking fun while it lasted, but now Nordstrom's going to crush you. And I was like, whatever. But I probably thought the same thing. The reality of what happened was it kind of like re-energized everyone, where it was brands or investors of like, wait a minute, Nordstrom's like, you know, one of the most reputable footwear companies in the world. If they're putting all this money into e-commerce, maybe this is a space that is going to work, right? So Sequoia had kind of re-engaged with us finally, saying, all right, well, so we got all the way through the partner meeting. So basically the partner meeting is once a week. They have this partner meeting. They invite any companies that are in, and it's basically where the partners then vote. And they said, I don't know, you know, if they have their own rules, if it has to be unanimous majority, whatever, I have no idea. But we got to that meeting, and that's a big meeting to get to. It's hard. It took us, by that point, it had taken us almost a year to get to this meeting. Oh, no, it had probably taken me 6 months since I first was introduced to someone there. And they said to him, hey, so Nordstrom Shoes, how much were you involved in that decision? Now, the reality was he was working in San Francisco Nordstrom. He wasn't at headquarters in Seattle. He wasn't doing anything with this fucking thing. He was probably aware that they were doing something of it through the grapevine, but he said, yeah, I was involved with that. And that you were. Yeah. And then one of the guys I remember, you know, I was sitting there going, oh, shit. I was hoping that everyone would be like, okay, cool. But you could just see a couple of guys perked up and they're like, huh, all right. What was your role? And he was like, oh, you know, and he probably realized the same thing. Oh, I should have just said this. He's like, oh, they were, you know, they would just consult. And he's like, oh, let me get this straight. So you're telling me that Nordstrom corporate headquarters, when making a decision on their online strategy, was calling up a merchandising manager in San Francisco and saying, hey, John, what do you think we should do? Well, let's keep you involved in these discussions. He's like, yeah, but it was convinced, you know, it was clear that he hadn't. And so I felt, which probably was just me, probably wasn't the case. I felt like we lost credibility at that point. So I remember telling myself, along the same lines of wearing the suit to the meetings and then not doing it, like, I'm not going to lie. If I don't know something, I'm going to be okay with that. Like, because I had just seen in a huge meeting with big ramifications that like pretending to be something that you weren't or be involved in something you weren't or take credit for something you didn't do wasn't going to do you any good.
Yeah.
So I always thought, okay, I'm going to write that down. Like I am what I am and I'm not going to claim to be anything more than that. And so anyways, but so Tony and I were co-CEOs. And so I'm co-CEO and founder, he's co-CEO, right? And so a couple years later, probably, I don't know when it was, 2003, maybe 2002, 2003. Now we're at the next stage where we're like, okay, are we going to try to go public? At this point, we're probably, I'm guessing, depending on the year, we're probably doing about 70 million. And so we're like, are we going to try to go public or are we going to raise more money? And so we're going back and forth and we're meeting with different people. We're getting inbound inquiries now from investment banks being like, maybe we could take you public. How are, you know, they want to poke around and learn about the business. And I remember there was a restaurant downstairs from the office, and we went down there and we're meeting. I don't remember who it was exactly. I think it might have been like B of A Investment Bank. I don't know what it was. But we were sitting in this meeting and we're sitting in a booth. So there's me and Tony sitting on one side and these two fucking bankers sitting on the other side. And most of the questions at this point are financial. But they're bankers,
yeah.
Right? They're bankers, and we're talking about should we go public or raise money. So it's all financial questions. I fucking care less about the financials, to be honest, at this point. Yeah. I'm more focused on like, you know, brands and people and all that stuff. And And I want to be, it's like, I'm interested in the numbers, but I can't, I'm not interested in the numbers, right? I can't force myself to be interested in something I'm not. Yeah. And so they'd ask a question. And so, the dynamic with me and Tony was basically, when we needed money, he'd say, we need more money. I'm going to put money in at this valuation. I'd say, okay. Because it was a trust. Like he, especially looking back, he could have kept putting money in at the same valuation, or he could have had the valuation go down. To his credit, he always made the valuation a little bit higher, and he put money in. And I could have said, hold on, let's go shop this. No, no, let's do this, let's do that. But that would have slowed the business down. It wasn't the best thing, right? So there was just this trust, whether it was from first time doing it. I don't know, whatever. But I've never looked back at that and thought I was treated unfairly. I always thought, okay, cool. And that's, but that's sometimes hard for people to believe. But for me, it's like, don't get, you know, I was always told, this may not be the big, just keep this thing moving. Keep it moving forward. And so to me, it was like, hey, this is good people, and they're gonna put money in it. Where's you gonna? So it was weird. Like, there was a lot of those experiences where people always ask me, so how was fundraising and how was this? It's like, shit, after Venture Frogs invested, it was pretty fucking easy. We'd go to these meetings, we'd get rejected by everyone else, and then we'd talk to them, and they'd be like, all right, I'm gonna put some more money in, I'm gonna put some more money in, And I even asked him, why are you putting more money in? And he wanted to prove the same thing. Everyone thought he was crazy for putting more money in, so he wanted to prove it wasn't. But anyways, we're sitting in this meeting with Bank of America, this is probably 3 or 4 years in, and so they would ask me a question, because I'm co-CEO and founder. And it would be a money question. And then I would turn to my right, I'd look at Tony, and Tony would answer the question. Then they'd answer me, they'd look at me, ask me another fucking financial question. And I would be like, look at Tony, and Tony would fucking answer the question. So they leave and we get up and we're walking back. We got to walk probably like, I don't know, 25 yards to go back to the office, go up these steps. And I'm like, hey, I'm good. You can be, I don't need to be co-CEO anymore. You can be CEO. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't need to be CEO. He's like, why? I'm like, dude, at this point in the in this stage of the company, now we're doing some serious, you know, the CEO's role is largely financial.
Yeah.
You know the financial stuff. I don't know the financial stuff, nor am I interested in the financial stuff. And for me to sit here and be like, oh, I want to learn it all just so I can do it. It would be crazy.
Yeah.
I was like, I've already got a fucking business card that says CEO. Like, fucking good, right? Like, good enough, right? I'll tell my fucking grandkids I was CEO. I'll be chairman and founder. You be CEO. He's like, you sure? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right, cool. It took 30 seconds. We walked back into the office. I said, I'll send the email. I went and sat down. I said, hey guys, you know, sent the whole company. I said, I'll be, Tony's now CEO and I'm chairman and founder. And everyone came running. Oh shit, what happened? It's like, yeah. Nothing. And it was weird because no one could believe that, like, that hadn't happened. But one of the things we didn't have there, especially early on, was too many egos. There wasn't a whole lot of, like, it was just, and part of it was because we never had jobs. We're all basically our first jobs, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, oh, we created this flat hierarchy where everyone's approachable and we all think we're the same. It's like, no, we really think we're the fucking same. Like, the person we just hired with no work experience, that's the same as us 3 years ago. And you forget about, we've learned stuff in the 3 years, but we still relate. I still relate to this day to, like, an entry-level person because I've never gotten promoted, right? I've never had a job that wasn't entry-level unless I gave myself a title. So for me, I thought, if I can give myself a title, I can sure as hell take away my own title. Like, that's not hard. But that was, you know, that was how we got investors. And that was how I went from being CEO to not being CEO. A lot of people think that I sold the company at some point. Like, they think, well, one, people don't believe that I was really the founder, right? Yeah. So I remember going into a meeting. We had a brand later on, Dethrone, and we were doing a deal with Tap Out, and they got acquired by this company, ABG, a bunch of cocky guys. And they were in this meeting, and Mark, one of the guys from Tap Out, introduced me. He goes, oh, because we had done a deal where Tap Out would take over most of the work for Dethrone. And so they said, hey, this is Nick. He was introducing us. He goes, this is Nick. He's the founder of Zappos. And the guy, I've never fucking met him, said, whoa, let's make one thing clear before we go on. I'm like, okay, what's that? You were one of the founders of Zappos. You were not the founder of Zappos. I'm like, who the fuck are you? I'm like, well, I could fucking give a shit, but
a little ego.
Yeah, no,
came out.
I was, yeah, no, I mean, I was the only founder of Zappos, but whatever you fucking want to think, knock yourself out. But it's funny, I get that a lot. Even if someone were to say right now, like, oh, what's your title? What'd you do? I was the founder of Zappos. Okay. No, 9 out of 10 times, if they ask me, and then right next 5 seconds later, they have to refer to me or introduce me, they're going to say, he was one of the founders, or he was the co-founder of Zappos. And the reason is because And we joke about this. It used to make my friends mad. It didn't really bug me as much, other than the fact that I had to deal with my friends getting mad. It was like the press would always refer to Tony as founder and CEO. And I don't, I mean, Tony would always be like, hey, I'm not asking him to fucking do this. And hey, I told this person I'm not the founder, I'm just the CEO. And it would drive people crazy. But I think it was more just the press likes the story of like the found, they want the founder and CEO, right? And he was there early on, right? In theory, he started unofficially working with the company like 6 months in, right? And he was, you know, when we do, like, we were in like a Startups magazine and Entrepreneur magazine and stuff, we'd both be on there together, right? Yeah. And so it was never really a big deal, but like they, it's a weird thing, because it's a weird thing that, like, I mean, now it's been 20 years and I still got to tell people, oh, fuck, yes, I was the fucking founder, right? I was talking to these guys the other day and they're like, the hilarious thing about this is, like, you could sit here and do a podcast about how you're the founder of Zappos and no one's going to believe you that you're the fucking founder of Zappos. I'm like, yeah, it is what it is. But no, I didn't, the company was never sold. You know, Tony invested. Eventually, Sequoia did come in and invest. They invested $45 million and, you know, as we grew and we started taking on inventory instead of the dropship model, and we had, you know, a lot of the stuff we led with, right? We were one of the first to kind of do like the 365-day return policy and like free inbound and outbound shipping. Mm-hmm. That was expensive.
Yeah.
So we weren't making much money. Like I said, when we get to $1 billion in sales, we're making about $10 million in profit. But we went through a lot of money, and we were usually bought way too much inventory in the merchandising mm-hmm. department. And we didn't, you know, we didn't experiment a whole lot. We kind of just kept going where we're going because our revenue's growing. But eventually it was like, and it was kind of the paranoia everyone always had was our credit lines were so big. And if Wells Fargo were to pull back on our credit line, we'd been fucked, right? Or if our sales suddenly dropped, we'd be screwed. Like there was always things that,
so you're running on the brink, you're like redlining.
Yeah, you always literally, it was so stressful because you literally always felt like you could go out of business the next day. And it's kind of now why I like doing these things would have individual locations, because like, okay, I can make this location. And then if I try to make a second one and the second one doesn't work, it doesn't fuck up the first one. Whereas with Zappos, it was like, as it just kept scaling, it always felt like, oh my God, this whole thing's gonna get fucked up. It doesn't matter how far along we are, it's all gonna go. Now, so when Sequoia would invest, so when Sequoia invested the $45 million, a lot of that was used to give us shareholders liquidity, right? Because now you've been working in a place for, you know, 7-8 years, and you're like, you've barely been getting paid. We were always like, how much, what's the minimum we each need to live, and what's our car payment, how much we need for food? And that's kind of how we'd pay ourselves. And then it was always like, the stock will be worth something. So one day, eventually we got the Sequoia thing, everyone was able to sell some shares, and then a secondary market kind of emerged, so people would generally, they'd sell some shares from time to time, again with the thought that we were always gonna. And eventually the reason the company was sold was because the board said, dude, you guys got to sell this thing, and then, you know, call Amazon back. Before I left, so I left in 2006, and the reason I eventually left, 2005, while I was still there, Amazon came out to our headquarters, and we met with them like at a hotel next to the office, so no one would know. And basically, Jeff Bezos is like, I want to buy this company, and I want to pay a price which is going to make all my shareholders think I'm crazy. And I was like, let's fucking do it. You know, like, what is that number?
Yeah.
But the board was there, and no one really, they did like, no, we don't want to ask, you don't want to get into this. I don't even know why you guys agreed to meet with him in the first place if you don't really want to sell the company, blah, blah, blah. So selfishly, I wanted to sell because at this point, I wanted to do something else. Like, I didn't get into Zappos because I love shoes and I wanted to work in one place for the whole life. Like,
why did the venture capitalists not want to sell it?
Because they thought this guy's not a guy that you should have around, like, unless you want to do something with him. Like, he's your competition, and he's going to poke around. And I think they thought, which is what ended up happening, if you reject him and you don't sell him the company, he's going to do everything he can to copy it and take it down, which is what happened. So when we said, no, we're not interested in learning anymore, blah, 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 then they launched their own online shoe company, and they tried hard to do it. And eventually they didn't get as much traction. They weren't able to take us down. By this point, we had a pretty good base and we were pretty big and we had a loyal following.
And they were doing just books at that point, right?
No, I mean, they were at that point, they were doing, I think they'd already added electronics and all that music and all that stuff. But they wanted to get into apparel for a long time. They tried to do it themselves and they realized, let's try to do our own shoe thing. I can't remember what it was called. And then they, but eventually the board was like, hey, you guys, I think you've gotten as far as you can. This company's, so I left in 2006. And the reason I left was I was bored. Like, yeah. I remember talking to my buddy Swinney, and he was starting a mortgage company, and he had like, I'm going to hire a couple people. I'm going to get this little office. And I'm like, fuck, I'm jealous. I'm stuck in this fucking place with a few hundred employees, and I'm talking about like where to put the security cameras all day. Like, that's not what I want to do. Right. And so as the company got bigger, in the beginning, I could do everything, right? I could go to the shoe meetings. I could redesign the website. There was times in the first couple of years where I could literally redesign the website and put it live. And it was like, and I could test mine against the designers, or I could like, you know, I could do anything. And all of a sudden, by the end, it's like we'd hired people that were better than me at all these things. So they didn't need me to jump in and do anything. They didn't want me to jump in and do it. So then it's like you're just becoming doing these general things. And I just literally remember talking about when we moved into a new office. When we moved to Vegas, it was cool because we moved to Vegas and there was like a dozen of us that went out ahead of time. And it was like being in a startup again and being college in time. We stayed at the Holiday Inn or whatever it was right next to Sunset Station. Yeah. We partied every night, went to the casino. We had this small office. It was like, yeah, this is like a startup again. But eventually, by the time the rest of the company got there, it was like, huh, fuck, now we're a big company again. So I was like, I just want to do something else. But like, how do you do that? If you're the founder and this company hasn't had an exit, hasn't like, you know, it's not like anything happened. How do I leave without that being a bad thing? And ultimately, I just realized no one, you know, it's not going to matter, right? Like, this doesn't do any good for me to be sitting here miserable. And some, you know, sometimes Fred and Tony would talk about, we want to keep this thing private for the rest of our lives and make this the last place we worked at. And I was like, holy shit, that sounds horrible. I don't want to fucking do that. I want to do more shit. You know, I want to start something up again. I want to do new stuff. So I left 2006, and then 2009, eventually the board was like, hey, you guys need to sell this company because your credit line, it's like you're way too reliant on your credit line right now, and you're not growing as fast as you were. And basically they said, hey, Amazon's outperforming you in all these metrics, and they're bigger than you. So like, yeah, if you go public, the way you guys are running the company, it's not going to be a successful public company. So, you know, we would encourage you to. So I was gone at that point, but I was still going to the board meeting. After I left, I kept attending the board meetings. And then eventually I got the call saying, I wasn't involved in all those discussions, but I got the call saying, hey, this is going
to
happen.
So was that Tony's decision to sell to Amazon?
No, I think Tony and Fred were trying to find investors in Vegas to buy out the board because they wanted to just keep running it the way it was going. And the board was like, we're not interested in that anymore. We think now you need to get out of this business. So I think Fred and Tony tried to find investors to buy out the board. They couldn't find anyone. And the board was just, Alfred came back and joined us as COO when we were out in Vegas. You know, kind of became the primary one running the company. You know, because like I left and did other things. And sometimes, and then what I would ask Tony, how could you still be there doing the same thing? But what I realized was he kind of left too. You know, like he had his downtown project and all these other projects that he was working on, but he stayed while he did those things.
So both of you and Tony were kind of...
Well, I was out. And then he, I would say, I don't know, after a year or so after I left, he was spending half his time on downtown project and investing in these other things. And like we had a board meeting where Tony pitched the board on Twitter, telling him what a great investment Twitter would be. And the board's kind of sitting there going, what the hell? But I think it's natural because I remember when we first moved into the incubator talking to Tony, and I was like, even then, you know, I was like, I want to open this restaurant. I got these other ideas. And he was like, dude, that was the hardest part at Link Exchange, which was his company before. The hardest part was staying focused because we all, you know, it's natural. You have all these ideas and you get all excited about them and you kind of get like, fuck, I've been working on this thing for years. Like, you know, and I think it's a pretty common thing. So that's always a challenge is like, staying focused with, you know, but where by nature, if you're starting a company, you're probably like interested in a bunch of things and you like starting companies.
Yeah.
So I finally left. And once I left, it was like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like I felt like I was like, anything was possible again. but I hadn't sold the company. So I still had, you know, I had sold shares along the way on the secondary market. But when Amazon bought the company, I still had shares. And so now I have Amazon stock. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was how, you know, so that was how I went from founder to CEO to non-CEO to in the eyes of most people, non-founder. I'm the only founder that's ever lost their founder job.
And now you're a startup addict.
Yeah. So now startup addict. So You know, when I look back, Zappos was awesome. If I could have done anything differently, I would have paid. I would have probably developed more relationships and learned more about the things I wasn't interested in, maybe, right? Like, it would have been helpful to, it was a great experience, and a lot of it was so caught up in the stress of, like, we might go out of business tomorrow, or just shit happening so fast that you didn't stop and take time to really appreciate, like, okay, what are we doing here, and how are we doing this, and blah, 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 blah. So a lot of it's kind of a blur. Yeah. Mind you, we're in our early 20s, and we're going out every night the whole time, right? So it's not like we're working 24/7. Like, everyone's basically getting wasted the whole time.
Yeah.
We had crazy happy hours and every day, you know? So, but anyways, but that's that. I mean, I think developing relationships, right? I look back and I'm like, there's a lot of people that I met from different footwear brands and different internet companies that I've never been that social, never been that interested in networking. I look back and I go, you know, there's probably some pretty good relationships I could have made along the way, either as friendships or just useful later on in business. So that's the only thing I would have done differently, was I would have soaked it in a little bit more, paid attention to the things that didn't interest me. Mm-hmm. And I would have maybe developed some more relationships with people that we met, vendor, you know, whatever, different things. But, you know, what I left there understanding was, you know, it got to be huge, right? And it got to be all these people, but it all started with just like, hey, here's an idea, why don't I go to the fucking shoe store and take some pictures? So it was refreshing to think, like, you know, there's no such thing as a $1 billion idea, right? So Zappos became a $1 billion company, but, like, as far as I know, no one's ever bought an idea for $1 billion, and nobody's ever invested in a company that hasn't started yet at a $1 billion valuation. Mm-hmm. So really, there's no $1 billion idea. There was no, like, I want to start this company so it can be a $1 billion company. It was like, I just want to start this fucking company because I think it would be more painful not to do this than it would be to do it, right? So you're just like, why are you going to the shoe store to take pictures? Because I want to. Like, it feels like a bad idea not to go do this. But I think the thing that never changed was it just started with anyone could have gone and taken those pictures. Anyone could have, you know, talked to people about the idea. So I wasn't afraid of, like, keeping the idea secret. So anyone could have gone out and tested the concept. And a lot of things you read about now, you hear people are like, oh, I started by selling vintage items because I didn't want to invest in inventory. So I would go to a thrift shop and I'd buy a couple of things. So it's a pretty similar thing that everyone goes through.
Yeah.
Get the concept out there and don't be afraid of talking about it. If I wouldn't have talked about it when I worked at Silicon Graphics, I never would have met Jared. He never would have helped me with the business plan. He never would have introduced me to Alex and these other people who then would invest. I never would have gotten my friends excited enough to put their few thousand dollars in there. You know, I just wasn't afraid of talking about it. And, like, if someone, you need a shoe guy. Oh, I probably felt sorry for myself for 5 seconds that I don't know a shoe guy. I know a fucking shoe store. Why don't I call the fucking shoe store, see if I can find a shoe guy? Like, none of these things took money. All these things took was just, like, doing it. And then it just kind of snowballs because you do this and this. And so I realized that doesn't change.
So every time you met new people, it opened a new door to progress it more.
Yeah, because I think of things I could have done differently. Like, a lot of people were very secretive about the idea because they were so worried, it's so big, someone's going to steal it. I wasn't worried about that. I didn't really know if it was going to be big. I didn't think it was going to be big. I mean, I thought I was, you know, let's see what happens. But then you kind of have to throw it out there. So I still think the most fun thing is thinking of something. I mean, the greatest feeling is going to bed thinking you've just thought of the world's greatest idea and you can't wait to wake up and hopefully still think it's a good fucking idea and B, tell people about it or make it seem like something real.
Yeah.
So that's always the biggest advice is the things I could have done differently would have been that. I could have been secretive about it. I could have thought, well, I don't have any money, so what am I supposed to do? You know, people think like, oh, I have to raise $150,000. I don't know anyone with $150,000. Well, I didn't know anyone with $150,000 either. I knew people that had $2,500 or $3,750 or I was introduced to people that had $10,000. The biggest investor in the first round was $10,000.
Yeah.
So I always think of those things. Like, those things are all still possible. Now, a lot of it was luck and timing and coming along at the right time. I could have come along in the fucking 70s and this wouldn't have been possible, or I could have come along now and selling shoes online that same way wouldn't have been possible.
So stay hungry.
Yeah, you gotta stay hungry. Stay curious.
Stay curious.
I think if you're doing it for the right reasons is what you're interested in, right? And so if you're interested in things, you'll pursue them. If you're just thinking about like, I want to make something big, it's not gonna, you know, that's impossible.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really weird if you think about it. Because, so after I left Apple, I was meeting with this shoe brand. I was working on this new project and this guy said, before we start, I hope this is a fucking $1 billion idea because I don't think you'd work on anything smaller than that. And I was kind of like a little taken aback. Like, again, I'm like, well, shit, I never even thought about how big this idea is. But what the fuck is a $1 billion idea? And who the hell are you to tell me what I could work on? But yeah, the more I thought about it, there are no $1 billion ideas. There's only $1 billion companies. You know, there's until someone invests $1 billion, until someone buys an idea for $1 billion or invests in the first round at a $1 billion valuation before they've even started a company, I will not believe there's a $1 billion idea. I don't know what I'm talking about. But anyways, so yeah, my takeaway is if I was a 19-year-old kid and I got $400, you got $400, you just need an idea, you know?
And stay true to yourself too, yeah, right?
You can't buy a company for $400. You can find something you're interested in, something that you're passionate enough about that you will actually do the things that you're supposed to do. Because if you don't really give a shit about it, you'll be like, I only got $400. How the fuck am I going to do that?
Yeah.
But if you're really excited about it, you'll be like, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do that. And then things will just start happening. So anyways, that was that's the Zappos story of episode one. Maybe we can go into parts of it later. But, you know, hopefully this podcast will, you know, get people's wheels spinning a little bit and get them excited about starting things. Because really, that's pretty much what we talked about was the starting, right? We've really only talked about Zappos was 10 years from the time it was, a little over 10 years, time it was founded until the time it was bought by Amazon. And the majority of this long time we've been talking has been about that first 6 months. So.
Well, that's number one in the books. And I guess next episode we'll.
It's all downhill from here.
Yeah, all downhill from here.
Is that how long we've been talking? Over 2.5 hours?
1.5.
Okay, thank God. I was like, holy shit.
For some reason, it starts an hour.
It'll be up in a couple places. TheStartupAddict.com is also on iTunes and on Google Play.
You can also follow us on Instagram at TheStartupAddict and on Twitter at Startup-Addict. Someone already had that.
Shout out to that guy.
There. Yeah. If you want to hear us talking about more nonsensical things, you can follow us or listen to our podcast, Talk and Talker, which is at Talk and Talker on Instagram. And that's with the UFC light heavyweight champion, Daniel Cormier, as he refers to himself.
And hopefully the heavyweight.
And hopefully the heavyweight too. That one, it's a weekly podcast. We just cover the last week in MMA. And Dennis does some crazy stunts with
chicken wings.
Food eating contest, yes. Ends up in the hospital, all sorts of crazy stuff.
Oh, crazy, silly stuff.
If you more interested on things we're currently working on, you can check out the website, fatedbrands.com, F-A-T-E-D, brands.com. You can also follow that on Instagram, at fatedbrands. One day we're going to get Julio an official title over there, although we'll probably have a future episode talking about the importance, or more so the lack of importance of titles. So that'll be a good intro there.
I like Solutioneer now. More than anything else.
Yeah. Solution A.
Dennis, I don't even know how to spell that on a resume one day.
Yeah. Anyway. By the time this is posted, you might be able to follow Dennis and Julio at Solutioneer 1 and Solutioneer 2. Anyways, thanks for listening. Hopefully, you know, someone got some inspiration or some ideas out of that. And if you did any questions or any thoughts, we'd love to hear those too. Just hit us up on one of those channels. Also, if you can, please subscribe to the podcast. It's our first episode. We're just getting started, but it'll help us in the rankings. And if you have anyone else that you think would enjoy listening to this or find it useful in any way, please also encourage them to listen as well. We really appreciate it.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps up episode one.
you're not a crab.